up a chair, the stories begin. Patrick and Randy are letting you in. From the desert lights where the big names are, it's Big Conversations, Little Bar.
Welcome to Big Conversations, Little Bar, the Coachella Valley's favorite podcast, recorded live at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert. Get ready for another fascinating hour of meeting people who make the desert city such a spectacular place to be. Now, nestled in their corner booth perch, well lubricated and raring to chat, here's Patrick Evans and Randy Florence.
Thank you, Howard Hoffman. We are back here at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert, the coveted corner booth. I'm Patrick Evans, and I am always pleased to be joined by my good friend, and I can't make any more accolades up for you, although I will say those are the most handsome damn glasses that you're wearing today.
Really?
Randy, model, actor, movie star Florence today, and co-host of one of the most impactful podcasts ever recorded in this booth.
Maybe I don't think there's any doubt about it. We are significantly the most important podcast that's ever been recorded from this corner booth.
Possibly this entire block.
Maybe.
I don't know. I can't speak to
Hey,
that.
I have a huge apology to offer to the Valley.
What'd you do?
Well, a couple of weeks ago on one of our episodes, we started out by me talking about having fallen in love with a rescue puppy and acting like I was going to get it. Lucy.
Yes.
We did not get Lucy. And I'm sorry for anybody who was counting on us, but I've got good news.
Well, I think Lucy was counting on you.
Lucy was counting on
us. That's kind of the issue. Yeah, well, I think you owe the apology to Lucy.
Actually, I think Lucy's in a lot better shape. We've seen her walked around the development. She looks really happy.
So you still have a chance.
Not with Lucy.
You can nab her.
Nope. We got a new one.
You got
and I
Butters.
Just want to introduce the Valley to Butters, our new rescue beagle, who is, I don't even like my kids anymore. I guess that's all I can say, because I'm in love with this dog.
Wow. And I knew a couple of the kids you weren't fond of before, but really, this just pushed you over the top.
It really did. And you've met him. I see you're not questioning the way I felt
I'm shocked and appalled. So, congratulations. I've been following the journey of Butters, and she's beautiful. She's just a stunningly gorgeous dog.
She is. I'm pretty sure by next week, we'll be ready to have her sit in here and listen in on one of our podcasts.
Well, she along with the rest of the Valley.
Yes, everybody's excited.
Well, you should follow Randy on his social media, Randy Florence on Facebook. You'll see beautiful pictures of Butters. And if you have room in your heart in your home, you should also rescue a dog or a couple of cats. Do your part. The shelters are overflowing. So you can stop by Animal Samaritans. You go to Palm Springs Animal Shelter. Wherever you know that there are pets in need, like Loving All Animals, it's a great thing that you did for Butters.
Thank you. And we actually worked with Desert Paws.
Desert Paws
fantastic.
Rescue.
And she was fostered by a good friend of mine, Aaron Highland. They took very good care of her before we get her.
Well, it's super exciting. I am so pleased for you guys. Can't wait to meet Butters.
Well, I told you, it's like a secret community. You know, it's like all these people are like, oh, you should get a dog. You should get a dog. And as soon as we did, it's like everybody invited us in. Oh, you got a dog? Now we'd like to talk to you and treat you well.
It's hard to trust people who don't have dogs. But now... Now,
yeah, but you're
back at the
you
club.
You got cats too, so
we do
that
have cats.
Offsets some of that.
We do have cats. We have, more importantly, a terrific guest today.
Yes, we do.
We've been talking about getting Jimmy on the program for some time, and he has steadfastly refused. I don't know what happened to worsen his judgment, but he showed up today.
He did. I think he was just walking past, and we pulled him in and didn't really have a choice. Jimmy Steinfeld, welcome. We're really excited to have you here. Are we hearing Jimmy okay?
Might want to crank Jimmy up a little bit.
Yeah, crank him up just a little.
That'd be great.
Test. There we go.
You have taken some of the most iconic photos of rock and roll legends. So I want to just, how did you get started, not just with photography, but what really pulled you into the world of rock and roll?
I will tell you very gladly. I'm going to... do a little promotion of my book in that regard, Jimmy Steinfeld, Rock and Roll Lens. And in my book, I answer fully your question you just asked. But now
but
I'm
going to try to get an answer here. Yeah, we're going to read this.
But let's read it out loud.
But I'm going to give you, of course, the thumbnail answer.
Yeah, give us the answer. Give us the Cliff's Notes version.
So when I graduated college from San Diego State University, I wanted to see the country. I hadn't really done as much traveling as one might think at that time. And I decided, how am I going to remember everything I saw on this cross-country car trip years later? A camera. I'll get a camera. And I had a buddy in college who was a fine photographer, and we went and picked out one for me that I could afford, a $100 Minolta. And I didn't know how to use it. He showed me. It's, you know,
So you hadn't dabbled in photography as in your youth?
Very little. I did take a class in high school, or maybe even junior high, but that it didn't addict me to photography at that time, which I would become an addict of later. But, okay, so I've got this camera, I'm taking pictures, but I'm taking pictures of landscapes and, you know, monuments across America and things. Things that don't move, stationary things,
right.
Pretty easy. The old manual cameras were actually quite simple. You only had to make like two or three settings.
Those original Minoltas were really smooth cameras to use.
They were.
We traveled with them.
Yeah, and many of the pictures in this book were taken with that camera. It's just incredible. But anyway, okay. But nothing's moving. So then one day, having been a music fan since I was a child, I decided I'm going to take that camera to a concert. Now you're photographing moving people and jumping people and so on. And the first several concerts, the pictures were not very good. But I guess I must have been born to this because, you know, without instruction, by trial and error, I got better and better at it. This was in the days when you had to focus manually.
Right.
Boy, was I happy years later when they came out with
autofocus.
Well, you walked in with a camera. Do you carry a camera everywhere you go?
I do. Yeah, that's one of my phrases, like that old commercial, your camera, never leave home without it.
And for some of our younger friends, we'll supply a picture later of what a camera is.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't have a dial on it.
It's not a phone. Most phones don't have dials on them anymore either, Andy.
The ones at home do.
I'll segue a little bit, since we're talking specifically about cameras. I brought with me today a Leica camera, which is really a Rolls Royce of cameras. Now, this is one of their smaller cameras, not one of their big, super expensive ones, but it's a autofocus, and it's got all the bells and whistles for a small camera, and I do bring this with me most everywhere. Now, when I do a really important professional shoot, I'm still working with the Canon 5D, which is sort of an industry standard, just fantastic camera. And I am now a ambassador for Leica cameras.
Okay.
So
it's a brand I don't know. So so they're really high-end products.
They are, absolutely. And so I've been going to a lot of their shows and their stores across the country. And even when I was in London last year, I went to two stores in London, including in Harrods. They have a section in Harrods. But so taking photos of the concerts, I got better and better at it on my own. And then I realized, but hey, who are those guys up in front that have official, you know, passes?
How do you get those?
How do you get those? And fortunately, at that time, and I was in Minneapolis, that's my hometown, and the two big concert promoters in that area were friends of mine and my parents and so on. So I said, well, how does this work? And basically, they said, call the record labels. Just very nonchalant answer. This is in the day where you could pick up the phone and call a record label in Los Angeles or New York from Minneapolis, and a human would pick up the phone. And the first thing they said is, well, who are you shooting for? And I said, for myself. And they said, no, it doesn't work that way. And they explained, you've got to be on assignment for somebody. So the early years, I shot for little local magazines.
How old were you at this point, Jimmy?
Oh, I was just after college.
Okay.
Yeah. So do the math.
Well, for me, that was late 40s.
So film noir period. Okay. So anyway, but I got magazines to say, yes, like, sure, go ahead and you'll shoot the John Cougar Mellencamp show for us. Oh, my gosh. And I got a pass, and I'd photograph it. And there's something really cool about seeing your picture, even on a little local publication, with your name under it. We don't want to talk about how little it paid. But pretty quickly, I felt I had enough little tear sheets and so on to contact. Well, here's what happened. A new magazine came out called Spin Magazine.
Heard of it?
Remember Spin Magazine?
Yeah.
And they came out to compete with Rolling Stone. And I thought, well, I'm kind of new to this, and Spin is new. They're out of New York. So I called Spin, and a human answered the phone. And they said, well, we're pretty well covered with photographers, but you don't happen to have any pictures of George Thorogood, do you? I said, I just photographed him last week. Or maybe a month before. And they said, we're running a story. We have a bunch of pictures, but send us what you got. And 2 weeks later, my picture was in a national magazine, Spin magazine. And that gave me the guts to call Rolling Stone, which I had been read, because who am I? I'm just still starting out. And,
not professionally trained. It's self-taught.
That's true. That's true. And the wonderful lady at Rolling Stone said, send me your portfolio. And I said, I don't have a portfolio. She said, well, send me some 8x10s. So I sent some 8x10s, including this picture on the cover of my book of Madonna and a picture of Prince. She wanted a picture of Prince because he's from Minneapolis. I'm from Minneapolis. I had just photographed Prince about 1 year before. I photographed Prince the night he recorded Purple Rain.
Oh, wow. Wow.
It seems unbelievable looking back in it. But he had the foresight of a lot of things, but he had the foresight for that particular show to have the sound truck from the record plant, I think out of New York, trucked into Minneapolis, and the great David Z out in the truck recording all the songs he played that night, because he had already started working on the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure he would have known, Prince would have known, that, you know, within a few months or whatever, that recording was so well recorded and the performance was so spot on. When you turn the radio on now, all these years later, that's the song you hear, the live recording with some tweaks. And I was there.
Oh, God.
So,
well, I'm also a little jealous because I heard you got to know Apollonia pretty well.
Yeah, Apollonia and I are friends. And as a matter of fact, when I opened my studio here in the desert 3 years ago, Apollonia was kind enough to come to the opening and appear, and just was terrific with my guests, and that was really fun.
And you got to work. You had a long relationship with Prince.
Yeah, that's right. 14 years. Now I only photographed him in concert. I regret that he never asked me, you know, let's do an album cover, but he could choose anybody he wanted, of course. But a year and a half ago, Iconic Images out of London, England, a big publishing company and gallery, put out a humongous coffee table book on Prince. It's called Prince Icon. And they contacted me, one of their other people contacted me, and there's about 15 photographers featured in this book covering Prince's entire career. And I sent in a bunch of pictures, and they ran a lot of them. And each of us photographers got our own chapter, you know, with our name sort of almost in lights.
Cool.
And then each photographer was invited on the opening page of our chapters to write a story about Prince. And boy, I had to give that a lot of thought. And I'm very proud of that story that I wrote. So that was, and then about a year and a half, well, when the book came out, they had a huge celebration in London. And I decided, this is once in a lifetime. So I flew to London and spent a week there. primarily for the unveiling of this book and the gallery. They also invited me to have a giant print of one of my favorite pictures I had done. I shipped it to them rolled up and autographed by me, and they framed it and put it up with other legendary photographers that were there, that many of them I had followed their careers during my career. So that was really exciting. And the final chapter, no pun intended, of that little story is maybe 6 months later, that London publishing company called me and said, "Do you have any pictures of Elton John?" I said, "You're doing your next book on Elton John, aren't you?" They said, "Yeah." I said, "I do." So I sent them a whole stack of pictures, and I've got a chapter in the Elton John book, which just came out in November, and very proud of that. So that's two books now with iconic images out of London.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Let's go back a little bit. When did you get that? How old were you when you got that first Minolta?
I think I was in my teens. Yeah, my late teens.
What was life like for you before then? What were you doing at home?
So I'd always been in love with music.
Okay.
As a listener.
Big family?
Well, not a big family. I've got two sisters.
Okay.
Mom and dad, two sisters. But a very big extended family. My grandparents, some of them lived to be, you know, quite old. They were around in my life. That was a wonderful thing to have. Not everybody has that. And then family gatherings, there were aunts and uncles and great aunts and great uncles. It was a close family. So that was nice. Everything kind of there's something that does go back further. I did take guitar lessons when I was just a child.
Yeah.
But that was tough. I just didn't pick it up.
I hated guitar lessons at that age. I just hated it.
It's just what happened. One of the instructors was good. He was more of a hippie. And he did teach me popular songs. And I really do think, for people out there listening, if they want to learn an instrument, play some songs that be taught using songs that you like and that you're into. A theory is important. Great theory is a fancy word for learning notes and melody. But for a little kid, that just killed it for me, because the next instructor I had wanted me to learn how to truly play guitar.
Yeah.
And so I quit for years. But then in college, many years later, there was a buddy of mine who had a beautiful guitar. And I said, "Hey, you know, I tried that when I was a kid. Now I'm older. I'm a little more mature." And he said, "Well, here, this is the G chord." I said, "I kind of remember that." And so I've been playing guitar pretty seriously for decades now. And I've been very serious about it for the last 25 years. Because 25 years ago, I moved to Laurel Canyon.
Yeah.
And
what an experience.
It really was. And my studio was there for 20 years.
Wow.
Way up at the top, overlooking the whole city of Los Angeles.
So many musicians who live down the street from you.
Absolutely. And it's inspiring. So it took my guitar, which I'd been playing, and I said, "I think I can write a song." So I started writing songs. I realized quickly I can't complete them myself. how my heroes Dylan and Springsteen and all the solo artists who write words and music do the whole thing. It's just amazing. But I need someone. Paul McCartney needed someone, and Mick needed someone. Don't, of course, put myself in that category, but I needed someone. So I've done most of my songwriting with other songwriters, and I just finished a song this last week with a truly amazing songwriter by the name of Robbie V. And his father was Bobby V.
Really?
Take Good Care of My Baby, yeah. One of my favorite songs.
Me too.
And so we've become good friends. And as soon as that song is mastered, I'm going to make sure you guys get a copy of that.
Oh, fantastic.
So,
what's the name of the song?
The song is called Johnny Road Shotgun. And the story about it is in this book. Everything goes back to my book.
That book,
it goes right back to the book.
It all goes back to the book, yes,
indeed. Jimmy Steinfeld, Rock and Roll Lens. So you need to get the book.
So you're coming through this. You've got your first Minolta. Were your parents pretty supportive of the direction you were headed career-wise?
Yeah, absolutely.
What did your dad do?
Well, he was a businessman,
okay,
and I worked for him for quite a while. And I think by my being out late at the clubs, shooting these bands, coming in tired, I think that might have got a little tired.
You weren't going to follow his footsteps.
No, but things worked out very well all around. And I just kept working this thing of calling the labels. Anytime a band came to town, again, I'm not in L.A. at that time. I'm not in New York or Nashville or London, the big famous music towns. I'm in Minneapolis. But see, here's where luck comes into, I think, so many people's lives, the timing. There'd always been music and wonderful artists in Minneapolis, but the 80s was just an explosion, and Prince was a big part of that.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. And but in addition to what Prince was doing with rock / R&B, there was a garage rock or punk rock scene that was going on independently.
Mm-hmm.
And bands came along like The Replacements, Husker Du, later Soul Asylum, a few years previous to that, some dear friends of mine, the band The Suburbs, and just all these art rock, alt rock, the Jayhawks, a wonderful band, the Jayhawks. I could go on and on. Why this wasn't happening in the 70s this way, why this wasn't happening, and it happened right when I was starting. So I ended up doing album covers for some of the local bands. And then eventually it got to where, to push the envelope, I need to get out of Minneapolis. Yeah. I need to be in a New York or LA or even Nashville. And I chose LA because I had our family had vacationed there since my youth, and it's beautiful and warm. And
yeah, once you've been to the West Coast, especially from a place like Minneapolis, which
you can't ever forget it.
Yeah, you want to go back. It's allures.
And did that include any trips here to the Palm Springs area?
Yes.
Okay.
I'd been coming to the Palm Springs area since I was a teenager. First, because even when our family would come out to visit family in Los Angeles, we took an occasional side trip here to the desert. But when I was at San Diego State, when I was a young adult, my aunt and uncle lived here. So I would visit them often. And there I really realized now that as an adult, a young adult, this is a really neat, well, at that time, little town.
Yes.
I'll never forget, I took the Greyhound bus from San Diego to Palm Springs, and it stops in a little town, and I'm going to paint a picture for you. Well, you remember The Last Picture Show, the movie? Uh-huh. Kind of reminded me of that. We stop partway along the way, the Greyhound bus does, and there's like a swinging sign, the wind is blowing, and it's the tiniest, probably the tiniest bus stop in all of America's Greyhound stuff, and the little sign says Perris. We're in Paris? We're in Paris? It's Paris, California. I'll just never forget that. Anyway, I've been coming here for years and years. And then when I decided it's just time to make a change. We all have that time in our life, right? Sometimes it happens many times in our lives. And I've been in L.A. for 25 years. I had three different studios. I'll tell you one thing, as a photographer, unless you own your building, you're going to be moving around. You're going to have more than one studio, even if you just want one. I wanted one studio, and I made a beautiful studio out of an old warehouse in Culver City, but the owner sold it. So I was out of that. Then I had a really nifty studio on Fairfax near Cantor's Deli.
Oh.
But then I felt, you know, Laurel Canyon, the history and the charm. And I went up there and I found just a magnificent place and made that my studio for 20 years.
Artistically, can you kind of describe for us the Laurel Canyon experience? I mean, obviously, we know that's why everybody was headed there, for that experience. What did it really feel like on a daily basis?
For those who haven't been there, or maybe for those who've even just been there for a moment or two, you have to remember that Laurel Canyon is a neighborhood. It's also the name of a street that takes you from Hollywood over the hill to the San Fernando Valley. But the neighborhood is up on a hill with vegetation, with trees, and adorable, at least in the old days, little houses, little adorable houses built in the teens and 20s and 30s. Now, of course, there's many newer houses. But so it's charming. It's like a hillside community, but it's 5 minutes from the Whiskey, a Go-Go, the Roxy, the Troubadour, all the famous nightclubs on the Sunset Strip. 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes away. And so for musicians and artists, it was a way to get away, but then to be back down there in just minutes, particularly for the musicians.
Yeah.
And also very close to the recording studios.
Right.
We've had previous guest Andy Kahn talked about how they would just walk into each other's houses with their guitar and say, hey, listen to this.
Yes.
Was that kind of the feel?
It wasn't quite as much when I lived there, because that would be more common, I would say, in the 60s and the 70s.
Yeah.
But it was still going on to some extent when I was there. And the center of Laurel Canyon is the Country Store, the Laurel Canyon Country Store. And I got to tell you a little something about that. So, and it relates, of course, to photography. We're talking about photography and music. Every year, for decades, in October, I forget, that may not be an exact date. I think it's maybe on a Sunday. But every October, the whole neighborhood is invited to come down to the Country Store and stand or sit in front of the Country Store for a photo, a neighborhood photo. And I had been with all those people for many years in the crowd, big smile, sometimes wearing a hat to say, here I am. Anyway, one day I get a call from the people putting that yearly photo thing together. And it turned out that the man who had been taking that photo for years, he was ill or couldn't make it. So the person putting it together called my photography hero, a guy named Henry Diltz. He shot Woodstock. He shot he shot the famous photo of Crosby, Stills, and Nash sitting on a couch. He shot the Doors photo where they're at the Morrison Hotel.
Oh, yeah.
And they're looking through the window. And, I could go on and on. So he's a friend of mine. He's my hero. I always tell him, you're my hero. But they called him because he had lived in Laurel Canyon, of course, back in the day. Henry, our guy can't make it. Can you? And Henry Diltz said, you know, I don't live right in L.A. anymore, and I'm not available, but called Jimmy Steinfeld.
Oh.
I couldn't believe it. So now I got a lot of pressure on me. So I took my camera 2 weeks before the shoot. I got the ladder across, you got to get up high across the street, and I had to make sure I did a really good job. And I did a really good job. Wow. Very proud of that photo. Because I hadn't photographed 200 or 300 people before.
Right.
And also, you have to be the director. You have to scream across the street, okay, those were just test shots. This is the real thing. Everybody, yell, scream, get excited, smile, whatever. So I'm proud of that. And so if you go to the Country Store, I'm not sure mine is up there because they've run out of room, but they used to blow up the picture gigantic and hang them all. That inside of that store, the walls are covered with decades of those neighborhood photos.
Wow. You know, if I had a time machine, I have to say, there's a lot of places I'd want to go. Laurel Canyon in 1970, I would love to spend some time there.
There are a lot of places we want to send you. I want to talk about you. I want to get back to your book and the upcoming exhibit at the Artist Council.
Yes.
Because I'm very excited that you're doing that. I know the folks over at the Artist Council, and this, they only do one all photography exhibit per year.
Yes.
And yours is going to be debuting shortly after this podcast drops, coming up on the 12th. Tell people, this is very special because you are teaming up with someone who is also a longtime rock and roll and celebrity photographer.
Yep. The opening reception for this once-a-year all-photography show, which is called Through the Lens, that's the name of the entire show, is March 12th. And I approached the Artist Council with the idea of my having photos with my dear friend Harry Langdon, one of the truly legendary photographers in Los Angeles. By the way, Harry Langdon's father was also named Harry Langdon and is one of the most famous silent movie comedians of all time.
Really?
It's in the same era as Chaplin, Keaton, and Lloyd. All right. But his son is Harry Langdon, my friend. And so Harry's photographed just, not just music people, but everybody in entertainment. But the Artist Council said, yeah, that's a good idea. We'll give you your own gallery within the show, and you should probably come up with a name. So I thought about it, and I said, Harry and my show, we're going to call it Desert Rocks. So it's a rock and roll photo. Now it's all genres of music, I have to say. I mean, one thing that's very exciting is I photographed Frank Sinatra three times.
Yeah, tell me about that.
It's just incredible, and I'll elaborate on that. I photographed Nancy Sinatra and Harry. Those, by the way, the shots that I did were performance and concert shots, but Harry did a session or maybe multiple sessions with Frank Sinatra, and he did a session with the Rat Pack, so he's going to have those pictures. I'm going to have my Sinatra pictures, but we're also going to have, well, I can tell you what I'm going to have. Let's see, Keith Richards and Rod Stewart and Sheryl Crow and Chuck Berry and Eric Clapton. And then also for me, the sort of a key photo for me in this show, Desert Rocks, is Radiohead, because I got to photograph an actual private session with Radiohead the year that they launched OK Computer. I think iconic, absolutely. And those pictures of mine have been published all over the world sort of nonstop since 1997, but I'm going to have my favorite that I blew up pretty big in the show. And all my pictures will be signed by me, and either numbered limited editions or artist proofs. And Harry's will be, I believe, all limited edition. I think he's going to have 12 pictures. Our Sinatra pieces are humongous.
Oh, they're big,
they're
big, cool.
Big, big, gorgeous prints.
Well, and the befitting others, Sinatra. He was bigger than life.
Yeah. It's amazing.
Have you done any William Shatner?
No,
he's not really a rock and roll.
I know he's not, but I just wanted to get you excited said yes.
He does have a new album coming out.
Oh, my God.
Metal album. Yeah. It's going to be amazing. He's teaming up with Metallica. That's 100% true story. So, I don't know. Jimmy May, it could happen. You might be able to shoot William Shatner doing his Metallica song.
I would love to do that. And
I just read they're doing a residence at the Sphere. Metallica.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
I'd love to see that.
That's pretty crazy.
That's pretty crazy.
Because they haven't been together for a while.
No.
My icebreaker question with Shatner, if I ever did a session, I'd say, okay, I want you to give me that fear that you had on the wing of the plane in the Twilight Zone episode.
One of the greatest Twilight Zone episodes.
He wasn't on the wing of the plane. I did.
No,
the
he
monster
was inside.
He was inside. So give me that look. Anyway.
So you shot the Sinatra in performance.
Yes.
Where were those performances?
Two of them were in Minneapolis, and then one was in Los Angeles. I photographed his 80th birthday party.
Oh, wow.
Now there were 1,000 or 2,000 people there, because it was at that famous venue by USC. And it was a televised event. And Bob Dylan performed. Oh. I photographed Bob then. I photographed Bob Dylan many times. He's also from Minnesota, and I've met him. And I talk about in my book, both of my grandmothers were friends with Bob Dylan's mom.
Oh. That's a great story.
Yeah, it's kind of fun.
Mrs.
But,
Dylan.
Yeah, but so Bob performed for Frank at Frank's 80th birthday. I was up in the balcony photographing the event, all kinds of famous, important.
I'm remembering that. Yeah. I remember watching that special, and Frank and Barbara were seated. They were set up. They had like little tables.
Yes.
And I remember seeing Frank and Barbara there, and I loved. Rickles came out.
Oh.
And he said, "Frank, let me make you feel at home." And he acts like he's holding a gun. He goes, "Reddit." It's one of the greatest.
Stephen E.D. Gourmet performed, and Vic Damone, and I was just and Springsteen. Springsteen performed. So I got to photograph that whole live show, and at the end, Frank came up from his table, and it was like a curtain call, and they all sang. I can't remember what they sang. Maybe New York, New York. And maybe happy birthday, but
They brought out a giant cake, and it's a very cool. But that must have been very cool, just to, especially with all of those celebrities and such a special occasion. To be with Sinatra on his 80th birthday.
Yeah, I've never forgotten that. I just happened to flip to this. I talked about Bob Dylan, who, of course, we all admire. And
so we're looking at Tom Petty and Bob Dylan.
That's correct.
Yeah.
This was a really special show. I know those of you in the audio audience can't see it, but it's Bob Dylan and Tom Petty performing in, I think, 1985. They did a tour with the Grateful Dead.
Wow.
I mean, my gosh. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers opened up every show.
They opened for the Dead.
Yep.
That is amazing.
And at the show I went to, the evening went, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers did a set, then the Grateful Dead did a set, and Bob Dylan, if you will, was the headliner that night. But at other, they would switch back because Dylan and the Dead not only were good friends, but I think they didn't want to feel like, I'm going to be the headliner for every town we go. Well, anyway... But this was the beginning of the Traveling Wilburys. Wilburys.
Oh, one of my all-time favorite groups.
Because I don't know all the details, but I think after being on tour together, they had known each other, but I think they became very good friends from this tour. And soon after I took this picture, the next thing you know, there's a band called the Traveling Wilburys.
That was a super group.
Yeah. What I'm trying to find here also is my Sinatra picture, which is... Again, when I was in Minneapolis, I photographed Frank once when he did a solo tour, and then the Rat Pack tour, the Rat Pack reunion.
Right.
And
did they actually tour the Rat Pack?
They got back together, but then Dean was sort of not well and dropped out, and Liza Minnelli stepped in.
That's exactly right. And so when they came to the Twin Cities... I photographed that show.
And was Liza with them at that time?
Yes.
I think, as I recall.
I'm pretty sure she was. Here's the picture. Yeah. And it's such a short story. And you mentioned Dean Martin. Can I read this very short story?
Absolutely.
Okay. And this will leave the listeners salivating for reading themselves other stories. but this is this. Well, let me tell you that in my book, this book has 50 pictures that I've taken. During my career, could have thousands, but it has 50. And I wrote each of the stories and they right across from the picture. So here's the picture. And by the way, it's Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., just a few feet apart from each other, singing, smiling. And I wrote this: Dean Martin is my favorite singer of his era. Along with his fellow Rat Pack members, he did a reunion tour. But just one day before the show, Dean got sick, or he couldn't do it for some reason. I was lucky enough to photograph Frank and Sammy, but I'll always regret never having a chance to see Dean.
Oh, so you have no pictures of Dean.
That is true.
Oh.
I did see him once when I moved to L.A. I went to have dinner at Dan Tana's, and there he was sitting just a few booths away. I did not want to bother him. I think he had a difficult last few years.
I think that's safe to say.
Yeah. We'll just let him be. But I love Frank. We all love Frank. Something about Dean's voice, though, is just, it was smooth.
I was just listening to Houston the other day. I just love that song so much. Going back to Houston.
Yeah. Houston. My wife prefers Dean to Frank as well. She just likes the smooth.
Would you be upset at me if I agreed with her?
No.
Okay.
Everybody has the right to be wrong.
Can I say one more thing about Frank Sinatra?
What's that?
One more thing about Frank Sinatra. Yeah. I'm very proud that Frank Sinatra recorded one of my cousin's songs. My cousin, may rest in peace, Jack Siegel, was an amazing songwriter of the old American songbook. Came out of, I won't say Tin Man Alley, that would paint him to be too old, but out of the Brill Building era in New York. And he wrote hit songs for everybody. Barbara Streisand has sung his songs and so forth. Many of them. But Frank Sinatra sang his song, which is called Here's to the Losers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I know that song.
And, it's a great song.
My cousin Jack wrote the lyrics. He was primarily
cool.
A lyricist.
Did you have other people in the family that were that reached certain levels in the entertainment industry?
One. And I keep her picture in my wallet. And I wouldn't have brought this out if you hadn't asked.
I'm glad I asked. Nice.
So there's Aunt Irene, and she was a singer and comedian in vaudeville.
Wow.
And she was one of these older aunts, great aunts that I told you about earlier, who lived long enough that I knew her reasonably well. I think maybe she passed soon after I graduated college. So
Mean something to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hang on to that.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
I found her old records and I digitized them. So that was kind of fun.
Do you mind if I thumb through the book?
I wish you
I'm
would.
I'm going to ask some questions.
I'm going to get into
Look
some
out.
Stuff here. You've been in front
danger,
of some iconic
danger, Will
people.
Robinson.
So I've read some stuff and I want you to tell me if it's true and then kind of talk about it. You once drove Johnny Cash to a photo shoot in your Mazda.
That's right. And
you had an interesting conversation with him.
I did. And that's the song that Robbie V and I just completed. It's based on that incredible once-in-a-lifetime experience. I did photograph Johnny Cash many times later, but never again was I. So what happened there, you want to know, how did that come about?
Yeah, how did that come
about? How do you end up in the car with Johnny Cash?
You know, if you can find the picture in there, I'm going to read it. I'm going to... Because I couldn't possibly tell it as quickly and easily as if I just read it out of the book. And it's such a fun story. We're flipping through.
This is riveting.
That sounds like from a movie.
While we're flipping through, unless you found it
there. You got another
one.
Yeah, when you find Johnny Cash, I'll tell the story.
Do you remember the story about being at the Minnesota State Fair watching fireworks with Rod Stewart?
Certainly do. And Rod Stewart, that is one of the pictures that's going to be in the show at the Artist Council. I became a quasi-official photographer at the Minnesota State Fair. I'd worked at the State Fair since I was a teenager. I sold ice cream cones. after college and moving back and, you know, starting to do this rock and roll photography, I realized that one of the biggest venues in Minneapolis-St. Paul at that time was the annual state fair. A bunch of very famous bands that wouldn't have played other venues during out the year, they came and played the state fair. So when Rod Stewart came and played the state fair, I said, oh my gosh, I gotta get a pass. And I got a pass that allowed me to shoot every night all the bands that would play over the 10 or 12 days. And those would be published in a local magazine. So at Rod Stewart, somehow or another, I was actually able to get backstage after the show. That was allowed sometimes, and sometimes it was very strict. So I'm backstage. It's an outdoor show. It's on a racetrack. It's the giant, enormous
dirt track.
I think it's dirt. Maybe it's dirt, and I can't remember. But a big old school racetrack. And with a stage and the grandstand. And then when the show's over, they do fireworks after Rod Stewart performs. And I'm standing there on the stage watching the fireworks. And I takes me a while to realize Rod Stewart is standing right next to me. He's just performed. I've been a fan since I was a teenager. He's standing right next to me, and I don't think I said much, but that was exciting.
Wow.
And it was kind of fun to watch. You know, a super famous guy, he's enjoying the fireworks like everybody else. He's watching the fireworks.
Rod Stewart is very down to earth. When I lived in Orange County,
yeah,
I had some friends who played soccer. He was in a little league.
Really into that.
And if he won, he'd buy drinks for you. We'd all go down to Manhattan Beach, or Hermosa Beach, actually. But if he lost, he was not buying.
Wow.
So did you just forfeit? I give up. You win.
I always rooted for Rod Stewart. But I got a chance to hang out with him a little bit at that time.
That was so cool.
It was very cool. He was just like, you know, after a soccer game, he came in. He was just a regular guy, wanted to have a beer and talk about the game. And that was kind of...
You mentioned soccer. So I played soccer in high school. Not to any great fanfare, but I loved the game. Loved it then, love it now. And so we would play a lot. And I know that a lot of the Brits, musicians, Elton John, Rod Stewart, you mentioned, many are so rabid fans of the whatever team they represent or follow.
So, right, circle back to Johnny Cash.
Yeah. Found this is fun because I had forgotten. With this Johnny Cash story includes a fellow desert dweller of ours, a wonderful man named Ken Wolf, and he was in the radio and records business in the Twin Cities. And so one day, and he lives here now in the desert. I'll just read this. So one day, my friend Ken Wolf set up a photo session or shoot with Johnny Cash. The moment we arrived at Cash's hotel, it was a mad dash to the cars. You go with him. You go with him. Johnny, you go with Jimmy. I'd never met him before. I was like the low man on the totem pole. This is a little interspersal I'm doing outside of the story here. I was just the still photographer. There was a producer and a director and a makeup person, whatever. And all of a sudden so Johnny Cash was my very first passenger in my brand new Mazda RX-7. As Johnny climbed in, he said, "Man, this is smaller than June's Ferrari." He actually said that. The photo shoot was next to Fort Snelling. That's a Civil War fort, by the way, in St. Paul, Minnesota. And I told Johnny, I told Johnny I had camped out at that fort many years before at a huge Boy Scout event. And we spent the rest of the photo shoot talking about scouting.
Wow.
And other things.
Scouting with Johnny Cash.
Yeah. So, and he told me that his son, John Jr., was in scouting, I guess, as a young person. But I just finished writing a song about that experience, and I'm excited to release it relatively soon.
On the cover, Michael Jackson. How many times did you get a chance to photograph Michael Jackson?
Only once.
Just that once?
Yeah, okay. Just that once. And boy, am I glad that I... called L.A. and Epic Records, I believe, at that time, and got it set up. And it was, and on that tour, one of his backup singers was a young school teacher named Sheryl Crow.
Oh, man.
Oh.
So I actually have some pictures, not many, of Sheryl from that night, but I have some very beautiful pictures of Sheryl from her solo career, which would come about not too long later. And one of them is in the show.
Yeah, you mentioned that Sheryl Crow.
Yeah, Sheryl Crow will be in this show.
You showed us an amazing picture of Keith Richards. And if people see this picture, they will immediately recognize it because it has been published in many places.
Yes, it has.
Tell me about, that was done in Chicago.
It was. So it was, I believe, 1988. The Stones had not toured for some time, maybe several years. I forget exactly. And Keith, he wants to perform. He wants to play. He wants to record. And I think the Stones were not recording. They were not touring. I'm not a historian of the band. But Keith put together his own band, and he called it the Expensive Winos. And one of the musicians he hired was Waddy Wachtel, the legendary guitar player, very well known for playing with Warren Zevon. In fact, I believe Warren co-wrote Werewolves of London, song Werewolves of London. And anyway, Waddy's played with everybody. For the last many decades, he's been not only the guitarist for Stevie Nicks, he's the musical director of her tours.
So this is a heavy-hitting band.
Yes, and I wish I could quickly remember all the other amazing guys. And I mean, imagine if you get a call from Keith Richards, I'm putting together a band to record a tour. So he did a wonderful solo record, and he toured. He didn't play Minneapolis. I was so disappointed because I had never photographed the Stones at that time. Later, I would photograph the Rolling Stones. I could tell you stories about that. But I thought, it can't cost that much to fly to Chicago. I'm going to fly from Minneapolis to Chicago. This might be the only chance I'll ever have to photograph someone in the Stones. Because it was at that time, it was looking like the Stones might not ever get back together. Now, since then, they've had
Desert Trip.
Unbelievable. But at that time, I thought, okay, I'm going. So I went to Chicago, and he played at the Aragon Ballroom. It's a famous old theater venue. And you just never know what you're going to get when you go. Now I sound like Tom Hanks in that movie. You don't know what you're going to get in a box of chocolates. And I'm shooting pictures, and at one point, he's looking right at me. And to me, that's just the ideal picture. That's gold. Yeah. So I have my picture of Prince in this book. It was the same that night of Purple Rain. I mean, he was such a great performer, unbelievable. Yeah. And he would engage with the audience, you know, eye contact. But there were many people there. Yeah. Thank God, you know, while I was ready to shoot, he looked right at me. So I've got that great picture of Prince looking right at me, of Keith Richards, and others through the years.
If he took a picture of you and I bet we'd look at him.
Possibly.
Yeah.
I don't know. Very good. If you were performing on stage, you might not.
Well, that's the point. Exactly.
Now, I mean, aside from all these incredible photos that you've gotten to take over the years,
sure,
it's been a ticket to see some of the most iconic performances in some great shows. I mean, like, people would kill and spend a lot of money to go to these concerts, and you were getting paid to go take pictures.
That's true.
That's very, very cool.
And a great bonus. I might mention, we don't have to talk just about Prince, but I'll tell you one last thing about Prince. The last time I photographed Prince was at the Hollywood Bowl. So that felt kind of extra special. Now I'm living in LA, and it's always a big thing when an artist plays the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah.
And in this book that came out in November, two Novembers ago, on Prince, they used two of my pictures from the Hollywood Bowl show.
Oh.
One in color and one in black and white. And there's one other thing. When Prince opened his giant studio in the Twin Cities called Paisley Park, maybe you've heard of that,
mm-hmm.
I was one of the first photographers invited out there to photograph it. And, you know, when you're taking pictures, you don't know where they're going to be used in the future, how they're going to be used. In that gigantic, so I took those pictures decades ago, in that gigantic coffee table book on Prince Icon, that came out about 2 years ago. The only picture of Paisley Park in that book is mine.
Wow.
And they used it, you know, two pictures side by side. They called it a double truck. Maybe someone in publishing can explain that to me. Double truck. So I was very excited
about
that.
That's really cool.
Do you get surprised and pick up something and see a publication, see your photo in it?
Yeah, I still do. It's still fun to see that, see your name under there.
Do you see some of these pictures and you think, I don't even remember selling this picture to them.
Yeah, well, in a way, I don't remember selling it because I have an outstanding agent.
Right.
I'm with Getty Images, which
they are incredible.
The world's largest agency. And maybe some other time I can tell you how I got in there. It was a crazy turn of events. But so when people need photos, whether it's for a little project or a TV show or, oh, sometimes they'll turn on the TV, years ago anyhow, at Ellen DeGeneres or Oprah or a number of shows where they have the famous person they're interviewing, and then there's pictures behind them.
Yeah.
Oh my God, there's one of my pictures on national television. And so you'd get a payment. A lot of those payments are not that big, as some everybody thinks, oh my God, that must be $1 zillion. But it adds up. It's a great thing. And for me, it's just more exciting to have you know, your name up there and be proud that you've photographed these people that I admire so much.
I love this book, and I want to remind our listeners, Jimmy Steinfeld, Rock and Roll Lens. You can get this. The pictures come. There are 50 pictures along with 50 stories that he has curated out of the many thousands that you've taken. I don't know how you whittled it down to 50, but that's a pretty impressive job.
That was.
And once again, Jimmy's work is going to be at the Artist Council starting on the 12th, runs for about a month.
And I'll be signing these books.
Yeah, signing books, and the images there are for sale as
They are, absolutely.
So if you are a rock and roll lover, and he's got some big pictures of Frank Sinatra, I better not go in there because it's out of my budget. It's out of my price range. But
this has been so cool.
Yeah, I mean,
this is right up my alley.
I love the... You know, the history that you've seen through the years on the stage in rock and roll and how you've captured it, it really is remarkable. But the thing that I find fascinating about you is the image comes for the artist comes first. You're not really there to catch the concert. You're really there to catch the picture.
Yes,
I think that's a real, because a lot of people like, I got a camera, I'm going to go get to see a show and I might get a picture or two. But you really are focused on capturing these incredible iconic personalities.
Yes, thank you.
And you've pretty clearly done it because your pictures are all over the world.
Jimmy Steinfeld, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for spending some time with us
It's been really fun. I'll mention one last thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Harry Langdon and I have truly, I believe, put popular prices, so to speak, on the prints that are in the show. They're affordable.
Okay.
And
well, then I'll be there.
All right. Well, you know, the Artist Council does really focus on making art accessible to people. And that's why I'm really thrilled that you're involved with the Artist Council in this way. It's a great organization. ArtistCouncil.com, by the way. You can go and you can find out all the information on the show, which is coming up, and see Jimmy's information. Thank you again, sir. Terrific.
It's been great fun.
This is really cool.
Thanks, guys.
I can't wait to get into this book, too.
Randy, this beats the hell out of those blurry photos that you showed me of your band. Captain
well, I had
Stickship and
those are actually drawn. That was pre-photography.
Oh, it was like the court pictures.
Yeah, they were just court, yeah. And the biggest and good, best-looking one was me, but I drew it.
You did. Well, John McMullen, thank you very much, our producer. And folks, be sure that you subscribe to Big Conversations Little Bar. Our thanks to the team here at Little Bar. They always make us feel well taken care of and right at home. Our thanks to Skip Page. Remember to subscribe so you never miss an episode of Big Conversations Little Bar. I'm Patrick Evans.
Big Conversations, Little Bar is a production of the Mutual Broadcasting System. This podcast is available in audio and video format. Visit our website at www.bigconversationslittlebar.com. New episodes are released every Monday.
Athletes and dreamers, stars of the screen, leaders and builders, and all in between. Little bar at Big Conversations, Little Bar.